Welcome to Winning Is Not Everything, where we bring sanity back to youth sports by focusing on character development, effort, and sportsmanship, not rankings and trophies. I'm your host, Sean Jensen, former NFL reporter, children's book author, and youth sports coach. Today's guest is someone I have long admired, not only because of who he is or what he's done, but because of his amazing story. He's like a modern-day superhero, and one of his legacies is ever-present in my home office. Who am I talking about? Stick around to find out. Team Snap is the presenting sponsor of the Winning Is Not Everything podcast. Introducing the all-new Team Snap Plus. Elevate your team's skills with premium practice plans and tailored drills developed with the biggest names in professional sports. Explore ready-made plans, drills, and tools for any skill level built by experts at the MLS, the MLB, and more. Now available for coaches and parents in the Team Snap app. Plus, for club or league administrators, easily provide all your coaches with TeamSnap Plus via the new Coaches Pack, a bundled add-on to your TeamSnap for Business subscription. Currently available for soccer and baseball, with more sports to come soon. Learn more about TeamSnap Plus and the TeamSnap for Business Coaches Pack at teamsnap.com. When I was younger, I was drawn to new technology and the latest trends. I reveled in being an early adopter, and I was on the bandwagon pretty early for TRX, which stands for Total Resistance Exercises. So what is TRX? It's a form of suspension training that uses your own body weight to develop your strength and other aspects of being fit. Randy Hetrick is the creator of TRX, and in part two, we'll dive into what inspired its development. It's a remarkable story. But in part one, as we usually do, I go back to Randy's early days and influences, and it's humbling to see what this Navy SEAL entrepreneur and titan in the fitness world had to overcome in his childhood. Let's jump into our conversation with Randy Hetrick. Well, I am so honored to have with me as a guest today, Randy Hetrick, who is the founder of TRX, which is something that I use, well, I try to use on a daily basis, as well as Outfit, which is a new venture that we're going to talk about as well. But Randy, first, before we get started, thank you so much for agreeing to visit with me, and I can't wait to get started.
Hey, I'm happy to be with you. I'm excited to be on your show, and I can't wait to dig into whatever you want to talk about.
Well, Randy, I always go back. One of the things I'd love to know from you is tell me about your childhood. Like, tell me about your family, and then tell me about where you grew up and what was the influence of the community you grew up in.
Well, it's funny. I grew up in, I feel really fortunate. I have a great family. Yes. I have great relationships with my parents, with my siblings, but I did not come up in a traditional nuclear family. I kind of came up and more of what I almost would describe as a traditional California family in the 70s, right? You could look at it sometimes as a tree metaphor, right? It started as a stump with two parents, then it split, right? And then each of those branches split and continued that way, but none of the branches ever fall off the tree. So I have this great, big, messy, multi-branched family tree. I grew up in Southern California. You know, my folks were only got married very early. I was a shotgun kid, right? So got married at 18, always stayed married for a couple of years, realized that was never a match made in heaven, split up. But it was the thing that I did get was I had a very close relationship with both my folks and, you know, always felt very supported and very different kinds of cats. My mom was a bleeding heart lib that, you know, if you asked her, I was the best at everything I ever did. And she was the unfailingly positive, non-judgmental side. And now the other side, I had my dad, came up from a dad that was an Army vet and kind of a child of the Great Depression in Kansas, right? And so much more hard knocks, much more of a knock you down to build you up kind of. So I had this very interesting dichotomy between my mom and who everything was okay, honey, you're going to be great, right? And my dad, who on my best day was wanting to know why I didn't do better. So it was an interesting place to grow up in the Southern California beaches back in the 70s, you know, were kind of an interesting culture all its own. It was very much anything is okay, you know, SoCal vibe. But yeah, I spent most of my youth growing up on the beach, body surfing, played volleyball. And then in high school, I got into wrestling. And so I was a wrestler, played a little football, was not very good at it, and volleyball, which I was pretty good at, and then ended up going to university at USC. So I stayed SoCal kind of from the time I was born until I was, you know, in my early 20s.
Now, this is a intentionally broad question, and interpret this however you'd like, but what's your favorite childhood sports-related memory?
I think if I just go with my initial gut, I had a great moment in junior high school. Because I was not a very good athlete when I was younger. I was tall and gangly and, you know, had two left feet, terrible allergies, and I was sick all the time from allergies turning into asthma, turning into pneumonia. So I kind of came up with this, not a lot of confidence in my athletic abilities. And I'll never forget when I was in junior high school and, you know, the junior high school I went to in Corona del Mar, Southern California, had a pretty good volleyball program. And I'll never forget trying out for that program and not expecting to make it, like being certain I was going to not make it. And I was trying out with a buddy of mine who was a great beach volleyball player and was 1,000% sure, you know, that he was going to be a star. And I ended up making the team. He did not make the team.
What?
And it was one of these moments where you kind of, your whole self-view, in this case positively, was kind of turned upside down, right? I went into it thinking, I suck. I'm not going to make this. I don't even really want to try out. You know, it's going to be another failure. And I made it. And that was one of those first moments when you're like, wait a minute, maybe I'm better than I thought. Maybe I'm better than, you know, than I expected. And so that's probably my favorite first memory of my athletic career.
Well, that's cool. Now, you mentioned wrestling, and I never wrestled, but a lot of my friends in high school were wrestlers. And when I was a sports reporter, I had a chance to cover two Olympics, and just so happened that each of those Olympics, I had to cover wrestling because of, you know, local Minnesota angles. And what I've come to find about wrestlers, the ones who succeed at a pretty high level, they generally are pretty successful in life, which is not surprising, the fact that you have had all the success. But what was it about wrestling that you enjoyed? And then what was it, do you think, that made you a good wrestler?
First of all, I would categorize myself as a decent wrestler. I don't know that I would say good. I wasn't really built for it, even all the way into high school, right? I was still, I mean, when I started high school, I want to say I was probably 6'1 and about 155, right? So I was tall and skinny. And being tall and skinny is not an advantage in wrestling, right? Like you don't see a lot you don't see a lot of world-class wrestlers that are these kind of spider monkey builds.
Right.
And so, you know, I had to learn to wrestle my style. So I was, you know, I used a lot of leverage because I couldn't outpower the dudes that were, you know, a head shorter and a foot wider, right? That was just not going to work. But what I loved about wrestling, and then, you know, I ended up going on into university and switching sports into rowing, which there's actually a lot of similarities between these two sports. They're both these grinder sports, right? You don't see many people in the stands. Nobody shows up to crew races, but they're these really hard sports where you have to kind of go inside your head and be able to control the pain. And there was something that I loved about in each of those sports. One, just the nature that it's all on you, right? On a crew team, it is for sure a team, but you're in your own little world of pain and technique in a shell. And the same thing is true, you know, when you walk out onto that mat, like it's just you and the other guy.
Yeah.
But you're part of a team. So you get the best of both worlds. It's an individual sport within the context of a broader team, right? And I always enjoyed that aspect of those two sports.
Which coach encouraged and inspired you most when you were younger? I mean, you talked about a lot of different sports, but was there that coach that really was a big inspiration for you growing up?
Yeah, there was. My high school wrestling coach was a guy named Terry Lorenzen, and I really always enjoyed him. I remember him really getting in my head about my junior year and saying, you know, Randy, like, you're a good, solid B wrestler. And I was like, what? You know, and obviously, you know, one more than I lost.
Right.
But his point and it was a pivotal moment. He somehow figured out in me, you know, a big part of what was driving me was the goal to be the best that I could be. And yet I wasn't putting in the amount of energy and practice. Mm-hmm. You know, I was not at that point fully maximizing, you know, my opportunities. And so he pulled me aside and he said, you know, you're a good solid B wrestler. And that's okay. And that's okay. You can go through life that way and do all right. But if you want to become an A wrestler, right, it's going to take a whole other level of of dedication, of commitment, of time, just reps. And I'm just not sure that you have that in you. And, oh, man. And I'll tell you what, I went home and first I was like, man, God, that telling me that. You know, but the more I thought about it, and I had to look in the mirror, right, say like, and they all called, we called him Zoe. And that was his nickname. I was like, yeah, Zoe's right. I haven't put in, I haven't done my job.
Wow.
And it was a little late in the game for me to completely realize the benefits of a mind shift in high school. But from that moment forward, that was kind of a pivotal moment for me where I said, like, I don't ever want that to happen again. I don't ever want to be looking back at a period of my life that went by and saying, like, God, I could have done so much better with just a little more effort, you know? Because you got nobody to blame but yourself, right, for that. And and he honestly set me on a completely different trajectory in the rest of my life as a result of calling me a B wrestler.
Did you ever thank him for that conversation?
You know, I looked for him. I was lucky. I don't know what the criteria is, but I was lucky to be, I was inducted into the Edison High School Hall of Fame a few years ago. And I went back and I was looking for him, but I didn't, he was gone. He was doing something. So I'm adamant that the next time I go back for another reunion, I'm going to set something up with him in advance because, you know, between him and one of the teachers at that school in the history department, a guy named Ken Ammon, the two of those guys fundamentally shifted the trajectory of my life.
Well, tell me about the impact the teacher had on you, because, you know, I think that's great.
The teacher was a history teacher. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's interesting. Early in my high school career, I had a really lousy geometry teacher, really lousy, that basically soured me on math. Mm. And I went through the rest of my life up till today telling you, you know, I'm not really a math guy, right? Or just the opposite, right? You take what could be a very dry, boring, maybe for some, you know, subject, history. But the way that this guy, Ken Ammon, taught his classes was so engaging. And so he was also the JV basketball coach. So he had an element of a coach's mindset in what he did. It was so compelling that he got me really interested in history, which then got me interested in contemporary U.S. history, which then got me interested in things military. Right. And ultimately put me on a trajectory that led me, you know, down the path to the SEAL teams.
What was the most valuable lesson you learned through a challenge or defeat growing up? It doesn't have to be sports. It could be a personal challenge, you know, that you dealt with, or a challenge within your family.
I mean, there are a lot, right? I mean, I had plenty of them. So it's figuring out one. I honestly do believe that the big lesson that I learned was the idea of not allowing, you know, lack of effort to hamstring your ability to achieve your goals. Like, there's a lot of things that might hamstring your ability. For instance, I told you, you know, I was a tall, gangly, skinny, late developing kid. All right. Well, was I going to be a D1 scholarship wrestler or football player? Probably not. Yeah. Right. Just no matter how hard I worked, like, that might not have been in the cards for me at that point in my life. But I certainly didn't help my odds by not putting forth the 110% effort that every great champion puts forth. And I think, you know, the theme out of my youth that changed for me was I didn't make it as far as I wanted to make it as a wrestler. I didn't go to USC on a volleyball scholarship like I thought I might. Well, those were primarily my own fault, and I didn't work hard enough. And so I think that the collective lesson that I learned out of multiple sports experiences was, you know, all of us, we each have a moment in time at the respective phases of our life. And when it passes, it's gone. And so don't allow yours to pass by and not achieve the goal that you wanted because of a lack of effort.
Yeah.
That was sort of my big takeaway from my experience as a young athlete.
Wow, that's outstanding. What's something you would tell your 8, 12, or 16-year-old self?
Well, I think I would tell myself that, number one, you're not always going to win, and that's okay, so long as you feel like you performed to the full extent of your ability. You know, in every game, there's going to be a winner, there's going to be a loser. So anybody who talks about, you know, winning all the time, it's impossible. No one does it. Mm-hmm. And you have brief moments, right, where you win, and then there's going to be, you know, punctuated by moments where you don't win. But even when you lose, it doesn't make you a loser. And I think I would have told myself that so that I would have, you know, been less intimidated about trying things for fear of failing, right? Because failing is this concept that like holds people back, a fear of failure. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I probably would have told myself the most is like, don't worry about not winning as long as you put forth the full effort, because not winning doesn't mean that you failed. It just meant that you didn't win on that day in that place. And that's something that I think kids sometimes can get themselves psyched out and just say, oh, I don't want to do that because I might not be great at it.
Right.
And, you know, and life's about a lot more than that.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Winning Is Not Everything. Please make sure to like the podcast and subscribe to the podcast so you can immediately get the latest episode. If you have any questions or comments, please visit my website, seankjensen.com, and go to the contact page. You can even leave me a voice recording. And of course, I want to thank my presenting sponsor, TeamSnap. Check out all the new TeamSnap Plus and TeamSnap for Business Coaches Pack at teamsnap.com. Until next time, I'm Sean Jensen.